All right. Fransab, long time no see.
Long time no see.
What have you been up to?
Hard to summarize 2 years.
maybe let's start at the beginning. So when did we first meet?
We met, well, as I was saying, 2 years ago in the island of Madeira with a crazy experiment that you guys were running.
First cohort.
First cohort of the Sovereign Engineering. And actually, I think I was...
It was kind of the worst one, by the way. Like, people almost drowned, people collapsed on hikes, like, we were still figuring shit out.
We saved people's lives.
Yeah, we did.
We won't name names, but...
We won't name names, no.
I think I was probably the last one to join, I believe, because I sent the application a bit late.
Yeah.
And I had an interview with Martin, and I think the group was already kind of close, because you were aiming for 21 people.
Yeah, we made an exception.
You made an exception?
I'm glad we did.
I was so excited because at the time I was working on another project. It's called Zap Threads.
I know it. Yeah.
Because my perfectionist side was, first of all, hitting discus. Do you remember the commenting?
Discus. Yeah.
And then Fiat Jaff had built something similar, but based on Nasser. I thought it was a really cool idea.
Yeah. So the idea is basically you add a little widget at the end of your website or if your blog post.
Exactly.
And anyone can comment. And like the Web 2.0 version of this is discussed with a Q, right?
Yeah.
And Zap Threads was the same idea, but you use your Nasser identity to log in and comment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Fiat Jaff had built something similar.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I don't like it. This should be this way, this should be this other way, that's how I think.
I mean, FiatJeff writes very opinionated software, so there's no surprise.
And I think me too, but that's why, like, it has its good and its bad sides to be, like, very opinionated and want to see things in a certain way.
Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, that's what my take. And I was super lucky to come across Abla News.
Yeah. First long post client, basically, or one of the first ones.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I started working on that, and they integrated Zap Threads. I was super happy. I was being wanting to get into freedom tech in some way. I was kind of seeing the light of how, you know, I could get in.
Yeah.
Because I was planning to leave the fiat mines somehow, and then all of a sudden, I got frustrated with the App Store situation because I've been working on mobile for a while. And this idea dawned on me. What if, you know, Nostr manifest files? So let me give some context. Downloading software?
I remember in the first cohort, I think the stuff we also talked about was basically like virus scanners and malware scanners from Nostr, which is the opposite idea of Zap Store. Do you remember that? Where it's like you have the binaries and all the things, and if something's really bad, you can publish an event about it.
Yeah.
Sign in is like, okay, this thing infected my system, and so you have a malware scanner in that way.
Yeah.
Because I remember there were all these discussions, and at least to me, in my mind, like Zap Store came out of that. Oh, wow, that's a sound effect.
That's a reverberation, big time.
But before you maybe jump into that, what made you sign up? What made you hear about Sovereign Engineering in the first place? You just saw it on Nostr, or do you remember?
I saw it on Nostr.
All right.
Yeah.
So guerrilla marketing campaign.
I was telling you, I had this interview with Martin, and yeah, somehow I made it there. But I brought up Sovereign because it was, before getting into the whole development, just the spark, the initial spark, the idea, just came around those months. And I was still working on this Zap Threads thing. And not only software engineering, but from the OpenSats side, like, you're really adamant on please apply. So every single podcast was like, send your ideas, we need people, we need developers.
Yeah.
And that's how...
People are way too shy.
Yeah. Things have changed, but, you know, for the good, because now, there's like way more interest. But at the time, it was like, hey, this sounds perfect. And anyway, all of that stuff happened like in the lapse of about 4 months, I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, and at that point, Zapstore was just basically an idea. So it turned out perfectly to arrive beginning of 2024 to Madeira with some running code and with an idea. And in the island, one of the first walk and talks, I think that was your concept.
Yeah.
Of basically what we're doing now.
Yeah.
I remember talking to you and to many other people. And just kind of connecting dots, like my neurons were firing like crazy. Yeah. Putting all these things, all these concepts together, and I was like, this could actually work. And it's true what you mentioned about the malware, but also I remember you writing earlier, maybe on an Oster post, about Nynite, is it called?
Yeah, exactly, Nynite, if you set up a new Windows system.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's you basically download this one .exe file, and it does all the other work for you. Like it has these, like if you're actually a power user, it has all the things that you want kind of pre-selected, and you just select them all and click download and install, and you don't have to do anything anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a trust-based system, of course, but lots of people use it.
Yeah. And that was an inspiration for AppStacks. Essentially, it's just a collection of apps.
Yeah.
And that also made sense. So it was about security, because we have cryptographic primitives. It was about discovery. It was obviously about monetization.
Yeah.
Because we had the apps. And that's kind of how it started. And Sovereign Engineering Cohort was basically fuel on the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't believe I'm still doing that.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about your journey. Like what did you run into, or what did you learn in going through the various iterations and versions? What version are we on now? It's like everything, to me, it's like amazing. Before I before you answer, let me just say, for probably over a year now, Zapstore has been my only app store that I use on Android. And I have like 3 phones. One just shit the bed today, so I have 2 phones now. But I get a phone, I install Graphene, I install Zapstore, and that's basically it. So what we discussed on one of the first hikes we went on the first walks we went on, is now reality, like only 2 years later. Mm. So I just want to say that's amazing. You know, like I know, because you are very, like, you're deep in the woods, you're very close to all the issues and the problems, and you know, like, the 300 different things that might not be perfect yet and so on. But I just want to mention that I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one, you know, like there's plenty of people that just, okay, you have a new phone, you install App Store, everything's there, all your stuff is there, and like it's just amazing that it works. So thanks for building it and sticking with it. But yeah, tell me, what did you learn, and how did your kind of view of the general idea change over the years?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that, because I only see the things that are missing.
Yeah, sure. You only know how the bridge can break down, and like the 50 ways how it can collapse.
Oh man,
you don't see the people that use the bridge every day and walk over it and are happy.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
And especially when you hear people, like, not only online, but in real life. I was overhearing conversation, and someone said, yeah, of course, you finish this and you put it on Zapstore, and like, I said, what the fuck, man?
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Maybe let's start with that, because that's kind of one of the last big pieces you build, I think, making really easy to publish to Zapstore for developers. And I actually mentioned this yesterday, but there's people right now that don't have an Android phone, don't have an emulator, nothing. They just have agents, and they build Android apps and publish it to Zapstore, and other people download them, like little games and like stupid apps and so on. And
yeah.
So that's insane that all that works.
To me, when American Huddle Vibe put it
again, was one of them that did it, right?
I thought if that happened, then as far as I know, he has like zero programming
zero
background, right?
Zero.
And it was just for fun.
He didn't even test it, you know?
No.
He was just like telling his agent, build all this and publish it to SAP Store.
He probably never even run it.
He's an iPhone guy, as far as I know. He doesn't have an Android phone, I'm pretty sure.
That's crazy. Well, we're going to get into curation, filtering, and all that. Because obviously, being able to vibe code and just publish anything is great. It also has a downside.
Yeah.
I just probably don't want to see
it. Great responsibility. Yeah. Build this virus and publish it to SAP Store.
Okay, we open like a million threads. I don't know where.
I'll shut up. You talk.
Which version are we on? I don't know, man. To be honest, like, if there's something I have a lot of experience with now, is sort of getting understanding of how developers version things.
You remember what I told you about noise? You clip on microphones and noise will magically appear. I've never seen a skateboarder in Oslo ever.
Right, yeah. That's just how things go in life, right?
Sorry to interrupt.
Demos fail at the exact wrong moment. But versioning. Like, developers just use whatever random things to version the...
Are you telling me that not everyone uses semantic versioning? Is that it?
Subvert is like, yeah, maybe about 10% of developers use it. So nothing makes sense, not even my own versioning. So I think we're at 1.06 now. I was courageous enough to call that a V1 because there was a big revamp from what the app... Essentially, the first code base that I launched May 2024, which did work. It was a bit ugly, but worked. And there was a huge refactor. It's basically a new app. So that's what we call V1. And that brought a lot of changes in terms of, let's say, community or first commenting. Zapping was also possible, but is going like much more social, especially the ability to like not only bookmark but create these app stacks and have other people discover them.
Yeah.
So those are kind of the latest direction where we're going. What else? I would say that something I also learned with time is that this whole thing about Web of Trust, I probably was one of the first ones to actually try to use it, to implement it in a significant way, because we're talking about not just shit posts, but we're talking about apps, you know, so you could get your money stolen or you could get your identity robbed. So it's, I guess, one of the most important things where you want to make sure that you trust what you're downloading. It's a tool. So back then, we didn't have much tooling around Web of Trust. I remember building a little backend service to compute Web of Trust.
That was one of the criticisms that people voiced, right? Should we maybe just go back again and then maybe do one more round? Because I think we'll just get into traffic otherwise. That was really nice and quiet.
Absolutely fine. Yeah. We can just
Let's go up and down here until we're done. So the Web of Trust computation, maybe talk a little bit more about that in terms of why it is so difficult. Like, why can't you just do it on device? Why do you need a backend service in the first place?
Oh, well, that's kind of controversial because, you know, there are so many opinions about it. And some people would argue that it's good enough to do it in device. I thought, like, also that Nosser would be, like, much, much bigger. And then, like, you're thinking about three hops, you know, in your social graph. But maybe just two hops was enough, and it could have been done on the device itself. But that, you know, opened a whole kind of worms that maybe I didn't want to really get into because I had other stuff to do.
Yeah.
Then, about a year later, we started the Vertex experiment with Pip.
Yeah.
And other people, other approaches to Web of Trust and so on. I don't think anything is like really, really defined even right now.
Yeah.
But absolutely, I think that's one of the things I really want to do. It's somewhere in some issue there on GitHub.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, just do a very basic local web of trust, you know, that you don't need necessarily to have a backend service. But if you want more accurate, up-to-date information, whatever.
I see. Like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Hmm. Almost like a caching thing, where it's like, okay, here's what you can compute easily, and if you want to get the freshest web of trust data with like a wider casting a wider net.
Yeah, with scores and so on.
Then you'll have to hit something that, because it's just the issue is right. It's computationally expensive because you very quickly have to compute the whole graph. that's the issue, and yeah. So you have to look at everyone who is an author basically.
But I mentioned that because my thinking has changed around that. And again, my first vision around it was, it's you, the user, against the world, because it's an open, permissionless protocol where anyone can publish, and it's up to the user to determine what to trust. You don't need a corporation in Silicon Valley telling you what you should trust.
Yeah.
Right? However, in practice, it just kind of didn't work out exactly that way, because there's like a huge weight on the user to be like establishing trust for every single application they want to install.
Yeah.
And they're lacking a lot of information as well. Just like imagine, that also works like that in society. You just delegate trust. You have different layers of trust. And if you live in a city and every shop you go, you need to like do a background check on the guy who's selling you stuff. Or you leave your clothes
in the cleaner.
You're not going to make a huge investigation about it because that's so inefficient and annoying.
If the place looks legit, then it's probably good enough.
Exactly.
That's how it works.
You just look at other who is coming here, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I think
in the kind of downloading apps kind of way, if you go outside of app stores on like I don't know GitHub releases, or like any package manager in the Linux world, it's very similar, right? Like or Homebrew or what have you. You know where it's like, okay, you. As a similar indicator, you have like how many stars does this GitHub repo have or something like that.
Absolutely.
And if the release is signed, like all the little ticks are green, then that's good enough. Has a couple thousand stars and everything looks green, you're probably fine with it.
You maybe have a look at the author on GitHub and see, you know, do they have followers? Is there some activity here?
Yeah.
So is all these heuristics to roughly determine? It also really depends on the app. If it's a calculator that has no internet access, whatever, right?
Yeah, sure.
So going back to that concept, long story short, ended up being that we're kind of landing on a different approach. Also because, by the way, it got quite a long time to have like relay management for some reason. I know you hate me for that.
No, I don't. It was just the main criticism that everyone voiced.
I was like, I really want it, but anyway, it's been there for a while. But then, like, the ecosystem evolved, and we have other things as well, like you know, Blossom servers, for example.
Yeah.
Eventually, who knows, cashew mints or web of trust providers and so on. So there's like a bunch of things you want to parameterize, or however you say that. And anyway, that was another reason why we're kind of landing at the moment. It's a huge effort to go towards communities. What does that mean? Is this place where you just trust a community, right? Or a group, or someone who established the thing. We're going to use these relays. These are our Blossom servers. This is a web of trust provider. You don't like it? You can just use another community. Right? And the implementation doesn't matter. That's a detail for another time. But that's just kind of gives the user, I guess, more peace of mind that once you approved a community, which is basically a catalog of apps in this case, then you can just relax right? Because you know that someone is checking for things.
It's not the user against the world, as you previously phrased it. It's like the user joins the community and the community does a lot of the heavy lifting.
And it's the community against the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the most important concepts for me, and I have been having discussions about that here with a lot of smart people, is the idea of credible exit.
Yeah.
I like it very much because, you know, there's a lot of shades of gray in terms of decentralization. We all want everything to be super decentralized and have a fantastic UX and fantastic security, but in life there are trade-offs.
No solutions. Only trade-offs. That's how it goes.
Yeah. So the idea of credible exit to me means maybe we just like dial down the decentralization to improve, I guess, UX. Because UX means, in my opinion, like it's so important because it means whether people stick or they leave. And if they leave, it doesn't matter how decentralized you are. You just don't have the people. You just don't have the impact.
Yeah.
But what's the sweet spot?
I think, and I'll give you my answer to that. I think there is a time component to UX. And the way I mean that is, like, my go-to example is always the university professor that has a static HTML page and never created a Facebook page, never created a Twitter profile, never created a LinkedIn profile, nothing. There's a new publication, it's one new line of HTML. He hosts the damn thing on his toaster and it will never go down. Amazing UX for him and for the visitors. You know what I mean? And it's like you can talk all day long that, you know, Facebook has amazing UX and all those kind of things. But let's say you're a university professor in a university in Russia or something, and then suddenly your Facebook page is gone and all those kind of things. So that would be my answer to, like, yes, because when design people, for example, UI UX designers talk about your amazing UX, it is about the Silicon Valley understanding of UX, of how can we attract a billion users until next quarter. And if all of them leave 2 years from now, no one cares.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if all of them get rug pulled in like 5 years from now, no one cares. Like, no one cares. That's not the metric.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's levels to UX because it's also like, have you ever tried to send, doesn't matter which country, doesn't matter which banking system, an international wire? It isn't amazing UX. It's like sending a Bitcoin transaction is like 100x easier.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The UX is so much better. And so you know, there's layers to UX and what people understand by UX, because the banking app looks shiny and everything is great and so on. But you know, like, it takes forever. You need to,
it's terrible.
You know, like, you need to KYC, you need to do like two-factor authentication like 7 different times. And then you're not even sure if it goes through, and you're not even sure, and all those kind of things, you know, like it literally takes people weeks or months sometimes to send money around.
You're absolutely right, man. Like, so, that's, I mean, I definitely know about sending internet wire transfers and trying to pay with a card, and the money is there, and it just fails, and it's, please contact your bank at this number and
great UX.
Monday to Friday.
Then you call the bank and it's another case of great UX because maybe it's the weekend and, you know, you have to wait 3 days until some robot maybe talks
to
you.
It's just insane. And that's probably the worst UX. So yeah, it's we have things going for us for sure.
Yeah. I think UX needs a little bit of a reframing, because also on the App Store side, for example, as a developer, the worse UX is, and everyone knows this who builds app and tries to put them in the App Store, getting into the App Stores is like the worst UX ever.
Absolutely.
You have to wait forever. Like, you have to jump through so many hoops.
Yeah.
And if your thing is actually interesting enough, you might not even be able to get onto the App Store, or you're getting pulled for other reasons. You know, like if you have actual enemies, if you're going up against some serious big players.
BitChat.
For example. And then, you know, like, again, is that amazing UX?
You're right, but still, because now, for example, you're talking about developers.
Yeah.
Right, here we're talking about marketplace.
Yeah.
It's a two-sided marketplace.
Yeah.
Where it's basically connecting in a decentralized way users and developers.
Yeah.
I'm mostly talking about users.
Yeah.
Because I know already for developers it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, SAP Store is unbeatable from the developer experience, I think. You don't need an account, you don't need anything. It's so agent friendly also to
exactly. I think I even designed this thing to the command line tool for publishing, which I eventually hope to make available on the web. But the fact that it can output JSON and like it's so all of the help of the actual program is there. Yeah. It's contained in the executable.
That's SAP Store CLI, right? Like if you
It's called ZSP. Now.
CSP, okay.
It's like a complete rewrite, and it's just way better. All and
right. What does it stand for? SAP Store Publishing?
SAP Store Publisher.
All right.
Yeah. Not a great name.
But. No, it's good. No. Your target demographic is developers.
Yes, it's
CSP is perfect.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think you can just throw it at your agent, and it will figure it out. So. Definitely, everything can be improved, but on that side, I'm quite happy, and I think it's proof because a lot of people are just like people who know it are uploading apps. But let's go to the user side, because that's what when I was talking about UX,
yeah,
is that the truth is that people already, I mean, part of the whole experience is that people are used to things. So people are used to, you know, the bank.
See, that's the microphone effect.
Just at the exact point.
getting mauled in public.
At least we're not bitten.
Okay. But you're talking about kind of like how something should more or less look and feel.
It's the expectation of the user.
Yeah. And that's probably like that leads us also to your decision of pre-selecting apps, like signed by SAP Store, right? Like populating the App Store from the get-go.
Yeah, but
with a
yeah. Hold on, I just want to like round that idea
because sorry for messing up your train of thought.
Yeah,
we'll have
to
turn around again, otherwise we'll just be in noise again. Hey, there's rubble. we'll let him pass. We'll let him pass.
He's also making noise.
we'll have to let all the noisy people pass.
Okay.
All right.
I guess you could just go back and forth like crazy.
Yeah,
people.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. what I was saying.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I just want to finish my idea.
Yeah. Yeah, on the user side, what users are expecting. What the users are expecting, what something should look and feel
the
like.
The thing is, all these things are new. Even like, for example, because the perennial challenge is like, signing with Noster, like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about, UX. And software in its way is better, I think, because it does not necessarily require an account to use.
Yeah.
So that helps a lot, I think. Just by the time you want to...
You don't need to sign up anywhere. You just click a button.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, it's important if you want to, like, again, establish the trust and all that stuff, but it's not like immediate, like a social media client where you kind of immediately need to sign in.
So yeah, you need to go upfront through a mini KYC usually, right? Like email at least and like a phone number at least.
Yeah.
Like they need to know something a little bit.
They need to, like, if you go to Primal or whichever client, you kind of need to know upfront, you know, hey, we need to generate your NSEC because like that's the way you interact with the whole thing. But on Zapster, it's like, you can defer that.
Okay, I see.
That's my point.
Okay.
Okay, so let's go to your question about, yeah.
But say a little more about that. What do you mean by you can defer that? You just generate...
Just by the fact that you can download the app and immediately get started without any accounts.
So most of the users are pure lurkers. They don't need to even...
Lurkers, exactly.
Yeah, they don't need an account even. Yeah, I see. Now that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, obviously, in social clients, like kind ones, you can also do that. But for some reason, right, when I'm just thinking of UX, when you first get there, is that probably there's a sign-in button, and the experience is much better when you have your own identity.
Yeah.
On Zapster, that was what I meant with deferring. You can just use it for months, and then at some point, you want to share your own app stack,
yeah,
or you want to use bookmarks, whatever. Which we're gonna even change that. soon. Like, you don't even need for your personal preferences, for example, excluding certain apps from updates, which is I'm doing that and developing that right now. A lot of people ask for that. You just don't want certain apps to be checked for updates because they were installed by other stores or whatever. And then your own personal bookmarks, your preferences, all that stuff that is basically encrypted, has a device key.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
So you don't even need to put, you don't even need to sign in as GG.
Yeah, yeah. As long as you're on the same device, the settings will come back.
Then you can back up that insight, you can back it up with your own.
Yeah.
Right? I heard that concept around here as well.
Yeah.
I think it's super interesting. So that differs it even further.
Yeah.
It's only when you want to share social signal, let's say, that you need to sign it.
Yeah, or look at Web of Trust from your perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that, again, is deferred by the fact that if you're just trusting a community, because you can just see that GG trusted that community, like, again, you don't even need to sign in. So, yeah, that will help a lot, but we're still doing now doing a lot of work on onboarding. For with the time where also someone wants to comment, because that I think that's what will push more people is you want to put a comment on an app.
Yeah.
And at that point, yes, you need to. Yeah. Or Zap, I guess. Same.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though you could just send an anonymous payment.
Yeah.
That works.
I mean,
too.
You could also comment anonymously, right? But then you'll have to do some other. Like Amethyst, for example, has the option to leave a comment as a name. But it's not very useful because then you have to, like, because you're missing Web of Trust, you would probably have to add the proof of work just to mitigate spam, all those kind of things.
Yeah, we are adding proof of work as well.
Okay.
Yeah. On the website, the Zapster web, that changed a lot. It didn't used to exist even.
Yeah. And that's really cool now that you can also, you have very nice links for every single app. Like if I want to share whatever, Wisp or with someone, I can just send them the Zapster link.
Yeah.
And it will actually look nice and has a nice URL.
Yeah, exactly. And there you can also comment.
Yeah.
So comment Zap and even just explore and discover other apps. And we're trying to use that as landing pages. So when people, and to try to work on SEO even, such that when people search for an app,
They'll land on the Zap Store page. Store. Yeah.
Now you have a download button.
Yeah.
That offers you two things. You just download the APK directly, which a lot of people love, or it's like if you want to keep updates, then you just download Zap Store and you get a QR code that you basically open the app. Once you install Zap Store, it opens the app. And then now you're on Zap Store.
Yeah.
And you got what you wanted, but you also get the updates and then you can discover other apps. So that's like this other onboarding process. And what else do we have on the site? Yeah, we have some more developer tools like analytics, which is it's a bit rough, but it just kind of shows that the amount of downloads and impressions for a certain app, which a lot of developers were wanted to see.
Yeah, it's another kind of UX expectation, right? Like it's another thing that people just expect.
Yeah.
Because if you like all the other app stores and all the other things have that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's something also is difficult to, not difficult, but we need to take into account the fact that privacy is really valued by myself, but also by users. And
developers as well, right? Like depending on the apps.
Yeah. So it was no go to make any changes to the client itself. So we're just arriving stuff, what we learned, like obviously zero, we don't have any personal information anyway.
Yeah.
But just deriving from the stats we get on the server, I'm just using that.
Yeah, yeah, I see. Yeah, on the analytics side, it's all anonymized by default, basically, more or less.
By default.
Yeah.
And then obviously there's tons of ideas, Tor and some magic cryptography not even know which updates you requested.
Yeah.
Is that, in my opinion, that's like a, let's say, like a thorn.
Yeah, it would be like a honeypot almost, you know, like where it's just like if you could figure that out
with intelligence, then, like if you would apply like you just have the eye running on you know, you could so easily correlate.
If you look at my phone and see the apps that I have installed, you know, and those kind of things, that tells you a lot about me.
Yeah.
And what I do and who I am, yeah, and so on. So you can profile people just by that, basically.
Yeah.
And put them on a list.
100%.
Yeah, that's what usually happens.
Yeah.
I want to come back to one of the things we touched on before, namely the pre-population. How are we doing on time? You're the time master. Good. We still have 25 minutes. Easy. Yeah. The pre-population of SAFSTOR, which I personally really liked. I know it wasn't universally liked, but it was really cool to just go to SAFSTOR and see basically all the apps we as a community more or less care about. I mean, you selected them, I guess. talk me through, like, what made you do that? And how did you decide, and where did you source like all the awesome apps? Because those are awesome apps. Like, I sometimes when I, you know, other people just do Netflix and chill, I did like browse SAFSTOR and chill. I was just on the couch and going through SAFSTOR and like, what are some awesome open source apps that I don't know about? And actually, the voice recorder we're using right now, that's how I discovered it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Fossify voice recorder. I fell in love with the Fossify tools.
Yeah, I love those tools. Man. Yeah. They're really simple.
Super simple. Yeah. It's so good. So tell me how, like, what, first of all, what made you land on this decision?
Yeah.
And the process of kind of like doing all that, because you signed as SAFSTOR, you signed and published, I don't know how many apps, you have to tell me, but hundreds.
This over 3,000.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does this pipeline look like and all this stuff? Like, that's quite involved. You didn't do it by hand, I guess.
I started by hand.
Yeah. Okay.
as you do. It's funny because back at the first cohort in Madeira, some of my buddies from back then were like telling me what their thoughts were about me at the moment, because I was the guy who's not building anything, but was just talking and doing presentations, right?
We outlawed presentations now, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, hard rule. You'd be shot on sight.
But for me, it was like a huge discovery of how do you design this thing, what's the potential, and I guess how you approach building a marketplace, which is, I knew from before, it's super hard to build a marketplace.
Yeah.
Like two-sided, even one-sided. Right, like let's say like white noise, where you have like all the users are the same. You don't have the two types of users.
Yeah. Yeah.
But super hard because it's a chicken and egg problem.
Yeah.
And so what I figured is that you have demand and supply. And in this case, demand is like the users who come to look for apps, and supply is the developers that put stuff on there.
Yeah.
But there was a way to like break that cycle of the chicken and egg, which was kind of, let's say, quote unquote, growth hacking. The thing is like hacking the supply.
Yeah.
It's like you can offer a lot of supply. So even though it's not like the ideal way, because the ideal thing would be like each developer is signing their own apps.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen.
We can kind of like, you say, okay, it's a proxy, or it's a, you know, selection by this other pub key, which is like what was only this absolute pub key could do that. And in this way, we attract the users because there are apps, and once there are more users, now developers are interested because there are more eyeballs.
And also, most of the users are probably developers in some way. Like a large part of them.
That's true as well. So, for me, it was super important to get adoption of the project, and I think it would have been a very different story if we just said like, just basically any other or Nostra client is like, you know, I give you the tool, and I don't know, you just figure it out. Like, whoever posts here, that's the content you will see.
Yeah.
Actually, it was a lot of work, man, because there are a lot of issues around that. Things break all the time.
I imagine.
Because there's, like, all the edge cases, right? It's like, when you look at it, it's like, oh, it looks easy.
Yeah.
But then you got all the, you know, you get the forks, you get, like, people... all of a sudden, for example, publishing, they were publishing a release, and all of a sudden they changed to a pre-release,
Yeah.
So now, should you index pre-releases or not?
Yeah.
Because sometimes the pre-release will just screw everything up,
yeah.
as it happened with Termux to a lot of people. Well, you're not supposed to use it because pre-release means that you need to be careful. But now Signal started pushing pre-releases for actual releases, so they don't show up. And then people complain because it's not there.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I see you're still traumatized by the experience.
It's kind of traumatic. It's a full-time job, man. So, but I don't.
What were some other edge cases? Like, what if did you check the signing as well? And like, did people rotate the keys, stuff like that? Or change where they publish their things, like if someone moves from GitHub to GitLab or something?
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Migrations, key rotations as well. Because then you're going to get a certificate mismatch. And so that's
then you get an actual
red error.
In Zapstore, yeah.
And people are
it's like,
not,
hey, this is malware.
Not going to the developer because they did the key rotation. They come to me.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
And honestly, a lot of the time it's just doing user support because people ask things. And I'm glad because the people are using it, but it's also tiring because there's a lot of questions. And what happened here? And this doesn't work.
So it was a good signal.
It was a good signal
that people are actually using it. But, you know, customer support is obviously hell.
Yeah, so it would be way easier if there were like 50 apps. Or actually, right now, I think there are about 150 Nostr signed apps?
Awesome. That would have been one of my questions. What's the kind of the ratio now? And because I noticed it myself that, I think Vitor from Amethyst was one of the first people starting to publish on Zapstore. There were a couple of first movers, right? Mm. And now a lot of the apps that I use are signed by the actual developers. So there was, for me, I saw this as a user that, oh wow, suddenly, like that doesn't actually say signed by Zapstore, it's actually signed by the guy who built it and so on. And so that's really cool. So what's your feeling in terms of adoption? And did this coincide with the tools you pushed out, like CSP and so on?
Yeah, I think that made it even easier to the point we were talking about earlier, that it's just way easier. Also, the tools to build apps are easier, so then there's more, the bar has lowered for doing that.
Yeah, now people just instruct their agents, basically.
Yeah, But there's like, honestly, I've been surprised for the kind of quality apps. Obviously, there's a bit of everything, but there's some apps that are really nice. And actually, some people that were not on Nostr, that came, you know, they opened they generate the keys, and they're more active on socials. They have their profile, the Nostr profile, and then they publish an app.
Yeah.
So that's really nice to see that they were coming from other places, and because
so
they wanted to
from
be
outside
Zapstore,
our bubble.
Absolutely.
And they figured out how to get into Zapstore, and that's how they landed on Nostr, basically.
Yeah, and that was always like my hope as well.
Yeah.
I think, and since you don't need necessary to know about Nostr to use it, that brings people from outside more easily.
Yeah.
And obviously that I always thought about it as a bit of a little Trojan horse.
Yeah.
Again, a theme that was talked about, like, don't push Nostr and Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, the Bitcoiners know this, right? Like, don't mention the B word. Like, talk about Bitcoin without talking about Bitcoin.
Money.
And then money. I think on Nostr, everyone's learning the same thing. It's like, basically, no one cares. And the good thing that Nostr has going for it is, like, it doesn't have a negative connotation like Bitcoin does. Mm. Like, you don't immediately think about, I don't know, you know, like dark markets or, you know, like rich tech bros when you hear Nostr.
Yeah.
For Bitcoin, that's very much the case.
Exactly. No, absolutely.
But I think it's a good strategy to just basically, I mean, it's salesman 101, right? Like it's the no one cares about what this thing can do. Everyone cares like what it enables to do. Like there used to be one poster where like how did all the MP3 players market themselves, and it was like, you know, 200 gigabytes, blah, here and there, 512 megabytes, whatever it was back in the day. Yeah. And I think the iPad came around, and it was just like, you know, 2,000 songs in your pocket or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like something else entirely. Like no technical specs, nothing,
but
something that people actually care about.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I can have 2,000 songs in my pocket? Like I'm going to buy the thing. And I think that's what a lot of the Nostr people are discovering now, that the technicalities of, you know, you're in control of your keys and, you know, like you can run your own relay and so on, are less important than what it actually enables you to do. And I think you mentioned some of the things, like as a user, you can just download an app and be relatively sure that it's what you want to have and that it isn't problematic. And as a developer, without going through any KYC hoops and sign up hoops, and without, you know, like, I mean, for Apple, for example, you have to get a developer account and actually pay money and all those kind of things.
Yeah,
you can
Google
just publish an app.
Yeah, yeah.
So publish without friction, basically, on the developer side.
And now it's going to get a bit strange in the Android world, because maybe you're aware that Google was tightening the screws, right? Well, maybe that's why, because when you're on Graphene, it's like, okay, life is great here. So, but when you have users that are on stock Android, then Google is going to enforce registration for developers, which basically includes KYC.
Yeah.
And probably a fee too, just to be able to even sideload, that's the technical term they use.
Yeah.
To install apps from like just other sources than the Play Store.
Yeah.
And that's going to require you to go through that, which a lot of developers obviously don't want to do for many reasons, and also friction. And I don't know, that's going to be a bit of a challenge for Zapstar adoption, to be honest. Some apps will just like will install just straight. Others maybe will, you know, get refused by the operating system.
What's your take on the whole situation, and what do you think will actually happen in the next, I don't know, year or two, or how far out is all this? And what's your, like, the one headline I read is the Motorola Graphene partnership, right?
Mm-hmm.
So talk me through that, kind of from your perspective. What do you think is likely to happen, and what might be a way out of the Google KYC mess?
Oh man, it's gonna be hard. But I see galvanization. I see, like, there's a point in which the grays are ending, and it's like kind of black or white.
All right.
You kind of go to the gulag. Okay.
No. Yeah.
Or you go
no more gray area. I see.
No more.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, well, I just stuck Android and use App Store on it, and it's just fine.
You're either fully KYC user or developer, or you're a terrorist.
Exactly.
That's basically what
we're looking at. That's basically where they're pushing us to.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. Like, it's I think usage will. So this will, as I was saying, this will galvanize people, and this will make more users seek a Graphene OS and alternative stores. The ability of, like, freedom of expression and freedom of reach for tools.
Yeah.
Right. Because, well, that's kind of a prerequisite to be able to communicate.
Yeah.
You need the tools to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if we are all hyped about BitChat and champion it and all those kind of things, if you can't even install it on your device.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's certain features even that I'd love to have, but it's just all about, like, trying to manage priorities and managing resources. But for example, the idea that was introduced by BitChat, I think, if I'm not wrong, that you can send a copy of BitChat over Bluetooth or something, right? So that doesn't seem to be an urgency at the moment, but we have the ability to do it, and it should be possible. So I think this is really cool. Like,
I mean,
not only send the...
That's kind of a Nostr idea, right? Like, the source shouldn't matter. Which server you download it from shouldn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just the signature matters. And so you can sign the app and just send it around. And how you get it, whether it's USB stick or Carrier Pigeon or Bluetooth or
so
whatever.
So we shouldn't have the R in Nostr then.
Yeah, I mean, lots of people share this opinion. There's lots of people that want to do peer-to-peer stuff on Nostr.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, that has its own issues. Would you look at that?
That's so cute.
That's an interesting blockade. Like, let's not get attacked by wild animals.
Yeah. This is a bathroom area, essentially.
Everyone is stopped in their tracks.
They're just putting mines on the road. You know?
Very, very cute and fluffy.
Cute ducks, yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of ducklings blocking the street.
So
you think things have to get worse before they get better, kind of? Like, remove the gray area?
Things will get that way. It's not that should or whatever, like, they will get that way.
No, but I mean, I think people are still fine with using the fully permissioned systems, developers and users, right? And I think any kind of move that makes the permissioned ecosystem harder to use or more cumbersome to use is eventually good for the permissionless system.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me make a completely different example out of left field. It's like Netflix was great when there was just Netflix. Like Netflix killed Pirate Bay, right? Basically.
Yeah.
And then it got everything, like, fast forward 10 years, everything got more cumbersome because you want to watch a movie or a TV series with all these exclusives now. And so you basically need not one Netflix subscription, but you need Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus and 17 others.
We're back at square one.
Netflix. And now people, like, Pirate Bay usage is up again, you know? Like, that's kind of my point. Like, people go back to the permissionless, frictionless system.
Yeah.
I think it's a similar dynamic at play here where kind of the more cumbersome it gets to, as a developer, for example, publish, get your app in the app stores, the more people will discover SAP Store and find ways around
it. Again, it all has to do with the people using it. That's what's so important, to have a lot of people using it, is because that is what it will attract developers. If you know that, sure, it's super easy to publish, but 5 people are looking at it.
Yeah.
Like, why even bother?
Yeah.
And that just disincentivizes developers. So that's why I'm so obsessed with that part, you know, of we need users, a lot of them.
Yeah. Is there... that might... I already regret asking the question.
Oh, dear.
But what about iOS?
Really?
There's no chance in hell to make anything like it on iOS.
So, okay, I did explore the idea. There's a few angles. There's I don't know if you're aware of Ad Store on iOS.
I know the stores that exist.
It's actually really interesting because they predate SAP Store by quite a lot.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they're aware of us. And when I came up with this whole thing, I was not really aware of Ad Store. So we have these two parallel paths, basically. Yeah. And now I listened recently to a podcast because they went like the VC route and raise money, and also are really into social things, but they're like Fediverse, right? There's like the Fediverse people, and for money, I don't know, I guess it's just Fiat or PayPal. So it's PayPal, Fediverse, and iOS, basically. And we're like more Android, Bitcoin, and Oster, right?
Yeah.
But that said, it's like a very similar concept. And they started out by building a kind of hacky way to load apps on an iPhone by self-signing. Mm-hmm. So you just, once you get the IPA, which is like the package format of an iPhone app, like equivalent to the APK, you could just pretend it was you who developed it, and you're just testing it on your device.
Yeah.
And that's how it basically was working. That said, there are a lot of issues on the way because you need an Apple account.
Yeah.
Xcode
developer tools.
You need the developer tools. I think for that, there's like two tiers, let's say. For that one, you don't need an Apple developer account, I think, which is like $99 a year.
Yeah.
But for the second tier, yes, you need a developer account. However, you can install any amount of apps. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the first one, I think it's about 6. Okay. And you need to refresh every 3 days.
Because how many things can you develop and test?
Yeah.
That's the rationale for that limit.
Yeah, yeah. If you have, like, let's say you have 200 agents running.
Yeah.
Producing apps. Yeah, like,
that limit was created before in a different time.
It's super archaic, even the whole process. Like, you can develop an app in an hour.
Yeah.
But
sorry, how are we doing on time?
5 minutes. We'll do one more bridge.
Oh man, yeah.
So well, there would be a way to do it on iOS.
It's essentially that's what I was trying to go after. Like, can we, by requiring a developer account, being able to, because you got like kind of unlimited apps, and also it requires a refresh every year, I believe. So that's much more usable, and like if that prerequisite, like if people agree with that prerequisite, like have a Apple developer account, and somehow, don't ask me how, trusted us with the credentials, that we can maybe place on a secure enclave or something like that. We could be signing apps and delivering over the wire, over the air updates, yeah, on their apps. So that would work. And that's like more the technical approach, but then you could have the more like legal, let's say, for example, in the EU, you could have legally an alternative marketplace on Apple, which is also what Ad Store is doing that right now. So honestly, it's very tricky. It will require having probably a bunch of extra devs on Zapster to,
yeah, yeah,
to
sure,
do that.
Sure.
I really want to, but yeah, I don't want to kill myself in the process.
No. I'm glad you're still alive, by the way, because I know that building such a thing out is anything but easy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if we're talking mass adoption and so on, then I'm a little bit allergic, getting more allergic by the minute when it comes to the mass adoption idea, I have to say,
yeah.
Because I do think that both Bitcoin and Noster are, it's mostly for people at the edges,
yeah,
like people that got debanked, people that live through hyperinflation, then like I don't need, yeah, to explain Bitcoin to you. And on like on the Zapstar side, for example, like if your app is controversial enough and you have trouble getting into app stores, or also like if you are from a region where it's really hard to get a credit card and stuff like that, then those things are a godsend, and you don't have to go through the official routes that don't let you through because you don't have a passport or can't get a credit card and those kind of things.
Yeah.
And so I think by definition, this stuff is kind of like built for people on the edges in some sense. I don't want to discourage you to bring as many users in, no, though, as possible. It's just kind of like my general take right now.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually like when we say these words, they don't really like users, a lot of users. What does that even mean? Like, do you want to talk about numbers? Because I could say a lot of users could be, I don't know, like 20,000.
Yeah.
30,000.
Yeah.
Which, if you compare with the amount of Android users in the world.
Yeah,
which by the way are
it's not way more than iOS users.
4 billion.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I think half of the world,
yeah,
uses Android. Let's, yeah, say daily something. That's nothing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So that's not mass adoption, as you would put it.
Yeah, as like the as the VCs or
no, no, would that's put it, not what know? I mean.
Yeah. Yeah,
but yes, I mean, I don't want to have 100 users.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
because,
yeah, sure,
that doesn't incentivize people to actually, you know, use it,
yeah,
and come and publish there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, and I don't mean this in a like I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I like for as many users to use Bitcoin and Noster properly. It's just getting people to use those things properly, yeah, has traditionally been very, very hard. Like I made this joke before. It's like I'm the biggest believer in wrecked education. I don't think there is another way. It's like people have to get wrecked and then they'll learn. There is no, like, as someone who did Bitcoin education for over a decade, that's my conclusion. You know, I used to say 2% of people are curious enough to like dig deeper and actually learn it.
Yeah.
But I think it's closer to 0.2%. And I think what you want to get, Linux is actually a great example. Like, who got attracted by Linux? Like, Linux conquered the world, right? But they didn't conquer the world by trying to appeal to the masses. They appealed to the neckbeards and won over time, but slowly, you know? And I think that's, I'd rather go down that road than kind of cater to the confused mob, basically, you know? and just ruin the thing in the process, which is what would have happened to Linux. Absolutely. Like, you know, if you just build out the things that everyone wants to see just because it's trendy right now, like you ruined the thing.
It completely. For Linux, it took such a long time.
Very long time.
And now you have very, very usable distributions.
Yeah.
That just like regular people like to use.
And also everything
else
around
it. And they've been popularized by YouTubers and so on.
Yeah, yeah. And everything else around it implodes. I mean, PewDiePie is a Linux guy now.
Exactly.
You know, and
exactly.
So on, because just Windows shit the bed so hard.
Even like DHH, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, he hated on Linux all the time. He was the Mac power user number one. Yeah. And now he built his own distro, you know?
So in a way, that makes me bullish, right? Yeah. I agree with what you're saying. The fact that things are getting crazier.
Yeah.
We were talking about Android specifically, but with age verification, that's coming to...
Oh, yeah.
You have to scan
a passport to display Minecraft.
Desktop, yeah. Right now, they're saying by voluntarily,
sharing
your age, whatever.
Yeah.
But there's some Linux distros that already said we're not doing this, or you know it doesn't apply to us, whatever. That's also going to get galvanized. You have the Linux distros that are going to be KYC and all stuff.
Terrorist.
And you'll have to decide then.
No, that's how it's going to go. It's like I remain bullish because it's also on the Bitcoin side, for example. A while ago, there was a lot of talk about outlawing. You know, mining, outlawing running nodes, outlawing Bitcoin. I was always like, let's go. Like, especially in Germany or so, like, you know, outlaw running nodes. Please do it. Let's push everything underground because then, like, everything will be Tor by default, you know, everything. Like, people will not stop running nodes, you know. Yeah. It's just that will harden the whole ecosystem. So I think there is something to be said about that. But yeah, I mean, for me, it feels like definitely. On the user side, but I care more about the developers and the developer side of things. People are not radicalized enough yet. And so I hope more people will be radicalized by all the stupidity that's currently happening. Yeah. Because that will actually bring real solutions. And I mean radical in a good way. I mean, you know, like Richard Stallman is a radical, you know?
Yeah.
Linus Torvald is a radical. Like those are radical people, like uncompromising people. Yeah. And there was a thing that radicalized them. And I hope that we'll have, you know, like, again, with all the stupidity coming down the line with, you know, you're not allowed to sideload apps, which means you're not allowed to install software that you wrote yourself. You're not allowed to install software that a friend of yours wrote. It's like you don't even own the device and so on. And with all the age verification laws and all those kind of things, like, that's just pick your stupidity, you know? Like, there's a whole bag of stupidity, and it's being thrown at us, and I hope that it will radicalize some people. So that's my silver lining of the whole situation.
You learn nothing and be happy.
Yeah, that's going to be the goal. Unfortunately. But, I mean, I remain optimistic. To me, again, like, to maybe end on a positive note, to me, it's amazing that something like Snap Store exists. And again, like it for over a year now, it has been my only app store. It's like I flash Graphene, I install App Store, I'm done. Yeah. I don't need anything else. Of course, I'm a special case. I realize that I don't want to compare myself to whatever, my mom or even my wife or whatever. To like I use these things in a very peculiar way, but it works for me and that's amazing. And it's like I love it. So we've come a long way already, and. I hope that anything that won't kill us will make us stronger, kind of thing, you know, like with all the changes that are coming.
Yeah, but to your point, you're maybe not for your wife or your mom, but like if things get really bad, eventually you'll be able to teach them. It will be obvious to them that that's...
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying. My wife's laptop is running Arch Linux. She hates it. It's not a choice, but you know, it's like it works well enough. It works well enough for the little... things that she needs to do.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know. The
good thing about, I think, Graphene and Zapster combo is it's not disgusting. It's like pretty good, actually.
It is very, very good. And it's getting better all the time. So maybe last 2 minutes, what's coming down the pipeline? What are you working on right now? Next couple of weeks, next couple of months?
Yeah, so a lot around like finally doing the separation to communities and like, the idea will be offering by default two communities.
Yeah.
One will be the Zapstore community, which is where devs self-publish.
Yeah.
And then there will be like the whatever indexer community, which is the apps we bring from elsewhere. So people who don't like that part can just switch it off immediately.
Okay.
And then we want to encourage people to run their own communities of apps.
which run their own indexes, basically.
Not only indexers, it could be, but you could have your own, like, I don't know, community for kids, let's say.
Ah,
you have your own selections, which
kids
is not,
games,
it's not a stack.
Yeah,
I guess that's an easier way to group apps or have a collection of apps.
Yeah.
But if you want, let's say, give the device to your kid, well then, a community where all apps are kid safe, right? Whether that's paid or not, whatever, like it's something that you could use on a device for a minor, let's say. So that kind of things. Also, exploring the part of adding. I think this is super important. Is adding like malware checks.
Yeah.
And privacy analysis.
Yeah.
Things like that. Reproducibility. So I'd love to have all that.
Okay. Let's see. Okay. I see.
But roughly,
last
that's
question:
the direction.
How can people help your project best? If someone listens to this, how can they help Zap Store?
First, obviously, download it and become a user. Zapstore.dev. Download. That's it. Your option, you can verify, you know, that the APK is signed by us.
That's right. Actually, here, maybe, otherwise we'll run into
best way would be go to Zapstore Nostr page and just check that, you know, people that you trust are following it, and then on the bio, there's the description, there's the links to download and to if you want to verify it, but just do that. And then if you want to send fat zaps, super encouraged, even on-chain.
How dare you? How dare you? I'll cut that part out.
The only part of the whole fun.
And on the developer side?
Just get signing. And by the way, I'll end with something that we will be developing, as it will be super important, and very challenging, is the migration from, let's say, we have Phoenix Wallet that we index. What happens if Phoenix Wallet shows up tomorrow and wants to self-publish?
It's kind of a key rotation issue in some sense.
Not in almost the sense of the Android, because that will work, but yes, in terms of how, you know, the indexer needs to stop checking that. But what happens if the developer stops publishing?
Yeah.
Then we need to carry on ourselves.
Yeah, pick it up again.
Pick it up again. So that's very, very challenging. Yeah.
Awesome.
I
know I said last question before. I have another one. If you know what you know now, would you do it again?
No.
Great answer. That was very quick. All right. We'll always end on a hug. Thanks a lot. Thanks for indulging me. I completely sprang that on you.
Yeah.
Like basically five minutes
abducted.
before we started
like
recording.
An alien landed.
Just grabbed you. And I think that was great. And I wish you all the success in the world, and hope that everyone's going to just use this stuff and we'll get through it. And
we'll be
all labeled terrorists. That's just how it's going to be. That's the brave new world.
I appreciate it, man.
All right.
All right.